David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. During this this pandemic where everybody's sheltered in, everybody's working at home, we wanted to talk to folks who may have some information that we can find useful. We want to talk to people who are adapting to working at home, and especially now that the shelter in place has been extended all the way to the beginning of May and probably will go beyond that. We know that the superintendent of schools just announced that there will be no returning to school, and hence many parents are finding themselves having to teach their kids at home. We have a longtime teacher, an advocate, and somebody who just made the papers up in the Sacramento area for her innovative way in which she's teaching her kids. And her name online is Sony Baloney, but her real name is Sonia Lewis. And we wanted to talk to her so she can share with us some of her thoughts and look at some of the underlying challenges that face people at this point in time. The key word here is equity. So, Sonia, welcome to the show, and how you doing?
Thank you so much. I'm doing, trying to manage. It's week three for us, and I'm trying to, you know, stay afloat. So it's been a juggle.
How many kids do you have? How many are at home?
Five are at home right now, from first grade to college, first year in college.
So you have the whole range.
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about this because we often hear pundits and government officials and people with means that will say, well, just stay home, you know, and you got it, you know. And it's like, you know, my world, I control the kids because they're young enough. You can pick them both up and carry them in each hand and actually remove them to the other room if you need to. But you have a kid, you know, kids that young, but you also have, you know, pretty much a grown adult. How do you range that? And I think people forget, you know, we often remind people that there are parents that now have maybe two or three teens living in a house. And man, you know, when you can't even go out, I mean, my kids eat a lot. I can imagine what you're dealing with. So how are you handling that, you know, five kids?
You know, it's important to establish a schedule. That's, you know, that I put on my teacher hat immediately when we got the news. And I haven't taught in a traditional classroom for about 10 years now. I've been doing educational consulting where I go into school districts and school sites when they're having issues, and we work on climate and culture when there's problems with equity. However, in my home, you know, we have a standard, and my husband and I tell the kids homework first, school first, and you know, they've been very diligent in taking it upon themselves to manage what that looks like. If we notice grades are slipping or someone's falling behind and struggling in something, you know, we step in. But it's important, I think, for just the sanity of our children, because we have to put ourselves in their shoes. They're used to some type of structure. They're also used to socialization. That's really and truly the piece that I think a lot of parents are missing, and adults even are missing, is that school is a hugely social place for our young people, and they thrive off of that. And so now with them being at home, it's like, we have to establish a routine. We have to establish something that is, you know, not quite the same, but similar in the sense that I know what I'm getting up to do every day, and that's the goal.
Let me ask you this. How should people, I think you gave some advice on getting routine, but do you think this is going to be the norm pretty soon? I feel that we're not going back to business as usual, and that people better get used to probably working from home. And I've been talking to folks and suggesting that they start establishing best practices that are equitable and work for them, because now we have software, and and I'm already hearing stories about school districts that have software being put into people's computer. If you leave the computer, then they want to ding you and discipline you. I mean, all kind of things that are almost draconian. But you, having done this for a while, what should we really be thinking about? And are we probably, this is probably going to be the norm. Am I wrong to think this way?
I don't think you're wrong to think this way. I think that this is going to open the door. I, you know, From my activist perspective, my, you know, screaming abolition and the system is broken for so many years, let's fix it. I'm hoping that we don't go back to business as usual. That is my ultimate, you know, goal and hope. I think that this is an opportunity to open new doors for people to explore new ways of doing business and getting work done, as well, not just new ways of doing things, but new ways of relying on things other than the traditional system. Because in so many ways, it is not equitable for people of color, for Black folks in particular. And so I just hope that we don't go back to business as usual. With respects to working from home and having lots of platforms that are available to us, I think that this is also an opportunity for people to create and, you know, just make things more equitable. And not for it only to be a Zoom out there, because I'm sure that Zoom is bubbling up right now, right? We know the hustle when something, you know, happens tragic like a pandemic and it's forcing people to be at home. All the folks I know are on Zoom right now, and we've been using Zoom in the activist world for a long time, but Zoom is bubbling up right now. And so when I see a WebEx or I see a Google Classroom that's popping up, I'm hopeful that there's some equity in people of color getting in on the wave of that. You know, there's been a lot of coding for Black folks out there. And so I'm just hopeful that we don't go back to business as usual. It is one of those things that I think that businesses are going to have to open their eyes and look at their bottom line and infrastructure. So if you have business A that has to run a business in a building that's costing them $10,000 a month to have their employees show up at a physical location day to day. And now that we're in this crisis, they're realizing that, oh, I can cut my cost down to, you know, by half if I allow people to stay at home and work from the comforts of their home. Now, I cannot say that staying at home and is good for everyone. I am an introvert, and I've worked from home for about 10 years now, and my kids are infringing upon the time that I need to quiet my mind. As well, people who are extroverts, you know, they need that socialization piece. So it just is a matter of balance. It's a matter of using this as an opportunity to see the varied ways that we can get business done and get it done more efficiently.
Sonia Lewis is our guest. Education consultant, freedom fighter, teacher, educator, all those good things up in Sacramento, if you're just tuning in. I'm real adamant that we really figure out what works culturally and practically and economically for us as Black folks. You cannot leave this to chance. So, you know, having worked, you know, pretty much from home for probably 20 years now, you know, there are things that I have. I have a studio. I have, you know, I have space that's carved out. I have routines. You know, I have a coffee shop routine. So, you know, and I need to go to the office, so to speak. There are certain places that I go in the community where I can have that energy of socialization, but that isolation to work. You know, there's a schedule that I follow. People look at me sometimes and they go, man, why are you getting up early in the morning, putting on your clothes and driving somewhere? And I'm saying, because when I drive 20 minutes to get to a spot where I'm going to work, you know, I'm dedicated. But, you know, the other side to that is that I don't have to deal with a toxic work environment. You know, a lot of times people are working in toxic work environments where they're micromanaged and you have microaggressions and all that. So that's the upside. But you also have to have a discipline to get your stuff done. And that's where sometimes people fall short. The TV's there, radio's there, kids are there, and you can easily get caught up into something that is non-productive.
Very easily. It's a matter of, what is my goal at the end of the day? I tell people all the time, not just for students, but for adults, establish your routine and set your goals and standards for the day. Set a standard. I used to do insurance sales, and I had a manager who said, even if you don't have clients for that day or appointments that are outside of the house, get up and get yourself dressed because it puts you in the mood that you got up to do work. And so just little things like that help the brain, function so that we are in a work mode instead of I can lounge around and halfway do my work. So it is about routine, and it's about setting ourselves up to succeed rather than fail, and knowing what works good for us. This way of living is not for everyone, but it's manageable when we have balance and we create norms within ourselves that we give ourselves just benchmarks. I have to meet this, or I need to make X amount of calls today, or I need to finish this report. And setting those kind of goals are very, very good for the brain and psyche just to manage.
Right. So this dovetails into the important steps that you have taken and that others may want to follow for our students. So one of the issues or challenges that traditional teachers have, the kids are restless. They're not listening. They're fidgeting. They can't concentrate. I know as an educator, I have a challenge on the college level, the university level, where folks just can't read. They can't sit still and watch the video. It's very difficult. So let's talk about how you, as an educator, been able to kind of establish some of this. And I think the key word I'm hearing is routine and patterns and schedules and goals. And so that can be scaled down for young kids, I imagine.
Absolutely. So, yes, I have at home. So my students are majority with Elk Grove Unified School District, which is a district in Sacramento County, and it took the leap so alone, and they were out there in the wilderness for themselves for a week before other school districts eventually followed suit, and they shut the doors. We had two family members of one student who had tested positive. The student hadn't tested positive. There were no students and staff in our district who had tested positive. But because of that concern and close proximity, they made the decision to close, all schools for a week. And originally, it was the decision to replace our calendared spring break with that week. And people were up in a, in their feelings, staff, teachers, administrators, and of course parents who were already had plans for spring break. And so the district went back and reevaluated midweek when they were hearing the news from the State Board of Education. We need to make some changes, and we probably need to stay closed. What do we do, right? So all of my educator friends are, we're having conversations. Okay, so how are we going to manage this thing working from home? And I'm like, are y'all really this, concerned? This is manageable. As a matter of fact, I think that a lot of kids that we think don't have the capacity to sit in the classroom for 6, 7 hours at a time, even for a 1 hour period at a time. This, imagine what this is going to do for them. So if we already have identified students and demographics, for example, Black boys who have the challenge of sitting in a classroom for an hour period at a time, imagine if they have a little bit of freedom to stand while learning, because that's something that I hear a lot of educators when I go in and do trainings with teachers. Why is Shaquan over there standing in his seat and he's so fidgety? Okay, you don't now have to worry about that because he can stand, he can jump if he needs to, as long as the work gets done. That's the ultimate goal. So I think that this is a huge opportunity for students to be able to thrive in a way that kind of highlights their strengths and not their weaknesses. And it doesn't pigeonhole them to a table and chair. an hour period and then get to the next one and do it all over again. That kills so many kids' spirits. I saw it for 20 years in the traditional classroom, and I always was thinking of ways, how do we reach that kid? How do we make sure that they are brought back into the fold of education? And so that truly is what, you know, sparked me into creating something for students outside of the traditional classroom.
You know, it's interesting. As you were just talking, I'm remembering when I was in grade school, you know what they made us do like halfway through the class? Everybody would have to stand and stretch,
And take a stretch.
take a stretch, you know, and I forgot about that. That's what was, you had to do that stretch break. Everybody stand up, you know, and you had to like wiggle your hands and wiggle your feet
Yeah.
and then you sat down. Wow. So,
And we've gotten away from that. We've definitely gotten away from that, because I can tell you in the past, you know, and that's not to say all teachers have gotten away from that. I'm just saying, as a culture of teaching and educating, we've gotten away from that. We've gotten so acclimated to and so consumed with tests and meeting standards in a way that we're trying to outshine other districts and other classrooms or other schools. We've gotten away from that need, and students, they need that.
let's talk about what you've been doing, because obviously it's successful, which you already know, but it's caught the attention of the local papers and media up in Sacramento. They have a big old headline, you know. You know, what did that headline say? I'm looking at it. Yeah, Mother Gets Creative with Downtime. And you're talking about meeting equity and creating revolutionary curriculum and all that. So, you know, talk a little bit about this.
So I try to, my job now is, as an activist, is trying to marry education and social justice. That at the end of the day, that's my goal. So I have an educational consulting business, Ascribe Education, and I usually work with school districts and schools when they are failing students of color, or there is an incident that is very racially motivated and things of that nature. So I'm always hounding school officials in regards to equity, equity. I'm hounding them literally, like, okay, put yourself in a black boy's school shoes. Here in Sacramento and throughout the state of California, there are reports that come out annually, and who's failing in those reports? Black and brown students, particularly black boy students. And so we know this. And so my goal as an educator now is to make sure that we are reaching in a way with creativity, with determination, and centering those students, because every school district across this state, probably in every other state, they always speak to equity, and they always speak to wanting to educate all students. So if the goal is to educate all students, you have to include black students. And if black students are failing, then you are failing. And so that's always something that I want educators and administrators to look at. So that's the first piece. All of my children at home are black children. And so we do a very good job with introducing them to black ideas and education and history and making sure that they're advocating for themselves. But they also have a routine at school that they have to keep up with. So I don't want to overload them with work at home that they have to do when they have so much work from school that they have to accomplish. So I said to myself when they were out for the first week, I said, okay, this is spring break. How can I create something that is one going to fill the need of this piece that I'm always screaming about? There's no equity in the schools when it comes to ethnic studies. We are always left out of the conversation. If you pick up any social studies book, I don't care what grade level it is, from K to 12, the story of the Black experience is extremely limited. It is very sugar-coated, and it doesn't speak to the tragic, oppressive experiences that we have experienced under this American government. And so I said, okay, well, as a social studies teacher, I have a history degree and a psychology degree from Spelman College. How can I infuse a little bit of truth in what social studies should reflect? And so that really and truly was the core idea that I had. We are failing Black students. We know that when Black students have Black educators and professionals in front of them, their eyes light up like, oh my God, I could be just like you. And so I have friends all over the country, and I have called upon, you know, my circle of friends to come into this classroom, teach a 15-minute session on your profession, tell us about your community work. So they're not just seeing me as a Black educator telling them about Black history and social constructs that will then hopefully resonate with them to be advocates for themselves and their classmates, which really will translate to wins for everybody, right? But they will also be exposed to a little bit of truth about who they are, and it creates and fosters pride. And that's what is blossoming out of this. And then, you know, we have a good time. We have dance breaks. I challenged them to the Renegade last week. I got back on in our classroom, and I want to see their Renegade. I'm trying to learn the Renegade because
so,
I have.
So let me just be clear here so people know. Mm-hmm. You're doing all this from your home online. You are tapping into the resources, calling the people you know from around the country. So while these kids are engaged, they're really getting the benefit of you being able to literally fly all around the world and bring experiences to them.
Absolutely. And the kids that are in the classroom, I mean, because this is an online classroom and it's a platform that is technically accessible to whoever, we have kids that are from North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Arizona, LA, Sacramento, Berkeley, Vegas, who are showing up.
So wait, so you have kids outside of your classroom and home that are now coming in and participating?
Yes.
Wow. That's incredible.
How fabulous is that?
That's you can get the best of the best when you have it like that.
Absolutely.
So give us a
mouth, and I just put it, you know, I said on Thursday, I said, I have this idea. Friday the 13th, I, you know, literally felt like the ancestors were like tapping on my shoulder, like, you got to do this. Don't just sit on this idea. Get your butt up and do this. And I said, you know what, you are so right. And I put together the you know, outline over the weekend. And I said, I'm launching it on Tuesday. It's going to be what it is, and it will grow itself. Mm-hmm. And I just had that kind of faith. And that's just, you know, usually how I operate is, let's put it out there and see if there's some interest. And I don't care if it's just 10 kids who show up. That's 10 more kids who are going to be mentally stronger and able to fight off the microaggressions and the implicit biases in the world. And hopefully they affect 10 more students when they go back to the traditional classroom.
Now, some people listen, and we're talking with Sonia Lewis. She's an education consultant. She's a teacher, freedom fighter, activist. People in the Sacramento area are aware of her online. She is under the name Sony Baloney. Do you have a particular lesson plan? You know, somebody's listening going, I got my kids at home. What can, you know, how can I get them educated? So walk us through a couple of things that you do that somebody listening might be able to emulate.
So I've been a rebel. I can tell you the first time that I felt like I had to push back on the system. I was 7 years old, second grade in the Bay Area, Woodrow Wilson Elementary School in Richmond, California, and I refused to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Old lady Miss White, Miss Bill Yu, older white teacher, she penalized me for almost a month straight, taking away my recesses, my lunchtime. And so I just was like, I'm not doing it. And so I always hated the routine of things that did not include people of color. And so we start off my classroom with lift every voice and sing. I firmly believe every Black student should know lift every voice and sing. I had the privilege and honor of going to an HBCU, so it became the norm of you know, who I was. But thankfully, I had Black educators who also made sure prior to me getting to Spelman that I knew Lift Every Voice and Sing. So if you don't know Lift Every Voice and Sing, that is the Black Negro National Anthem. And that should give you an idea that my curriculum that I'm trying to create is Black-centered, but inclusive of all. Anyone can show up in this classroom, because not just Black students need to know about Black history, all students do. So we then, after listening to Lift Every Voice and Sing, we go into our check-ins, because I believe that our babies are lacking for their voice being heard. And so we do a mental health check-in. How are you doing today? What are your thoughts about the lesson that we had previous? Is your school district doing anything to now bring you back into the fold of what education is going to be like going forward? I want to hear them articulate this. And so I have two separate classrooms. Tuesday and Thursday, I do the 5 through 12-year-olds. Wednesday and Friday, I do the 13 to 19-year-olds. And this gives them an opportunity to not just hear themselves speak, but hear and see people around the country, faces that look just like their own, and honor that voice. So we say thank you. We give each other virtual high fives and thumbs up. Then we go into a pre-lesson. We've covered, and I'm telling you, with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, we've covered integration, segregation. We've covered what slavery really looked like on a slave plantation. And I've given them, you know, the ugly side of it. And they have had very intuitive, reflective questions from it. So when I hear people say that these concepts are too hard, and this is the reason why it's been left out of the school system, our babies are thriving for the truth, and they are smart enough to understand it and have very intelligent questions about it. So that's the reality of it. So we go through a pre-teach. I show them some videos that I found on YouTube. Is a wonderful resource, right? You can find content on anything. And then I have, because I've been in education for so many years, I just have resources. And so if I don't find what I'm looking for, I'll call somebody up. Hey, you remember when we used to teach yada, yada, yada? Yeah, can you send me that link? And boom, it's there. If I have a guest speaker that's coming in, we had a guest speaker last week come and talk to us about branding and marketing. I then tied that into propaganda, stereotypes, prejudices, racism, social, cultural appropriation, cultural appreciation, and cultural silencing. So we got a whole, we connect the dots here. We're just not, I don't want it to ever be a time where I'm just throwing something at them for the sake of, oh, this is a good conversation to have today. We're going to be talking about the census and the importance of the census for Black folks and Black communities around the country. So we're doing things that are very relevant, because our students need to be able to see where their place is and connect to their ancestors and how they helped build this country.
Let me ask you this, and I know our time is short. The curriculum that you use, does it conflict with the, you know, the standard core, the core curriculum that Sacramento pushes, and, you know, or the standards that a particular school district would have? You know, oftentimes I run into folks and they're talking about, well, I do want to talk about, you know, the Black experience, but I'm mandated to have to, you know, tell everybody that George Washington is the father of this country and he chopped down the cherry tree type of situation. And you also have, you know, I mean, obviously you don't have that situation now, but a lot of times in the classroom you have parents and others who go there and advocate. I know when I'm teaching Black history, I've actually had students go, "You're talking too much about rebellion and violence," you know, so, like, are you serious? You know, luckily I'm in a, you know, I have the support where I can say, you don't need to take this class. you can leave. But, you know, I can see how in some places that can easily get escalated, and it has. And then all of a sudden you have somebody, you know, changing their whole thing. Like, we're not going to talk about Malcolm. We'll just talk about Martin and keep it moving. So how, you know, do you deliberately try to tie it into the core curriculum, or do you, you know, just really just go in what you feel is an equity lane that you travel down?
I think I do a pretty decent job of balancing both because I come from the, teaching profession. I realize that standards are important to school districts and the bottom line. So if you had walked into my classroom 20 years ago in San Francisco, where I started, I had so many outside resources in my class sitting on a shelf and students at any time. So if I had 30 books over there or 30 resources on the cabinet, I guarantee you that half of those resources were checked out by students by their choice. So one, we know that they want to know more than what's in the textbook. And so my way of making sure that we're following the standards is I would always bring in outside resources and I would just make reference to them. Okay, so if this is of interest to you and you want to know a little bit more about it, there are a couple of resources over there on the shelf. And students would just gravitate because they trusted that I was bringing something in that would engage them. And then what I would notice is that if I were teaching a certain population in class, I would see the glazed look that would come over their eyes, and I would say, how can I bring them back into the fold? And I always was very intentional on making sure that whatever my representation was in the classroom, that we talked about their history. And so if my classroom was highly saturated with Asian American students, we talked about the variety, not just China, not just Japan. We talked about Taiwan. We talked about Hmong and me, we talked about the variety of Asian communities that come and have culture and establish themselves in America. I've been in classrooms where it was highly Latinx. I could not stop at Mexico. I need to touch El Salvador, Guatemala. There are just too many varieties of what Spanish, quote unquote, I do air quotes, is. Because all Latin American communities don't speak Spanish. Those are, American constructs. And so it's important that we have outside resources and that we respect where people come from, their cultures that they bring to the table. But it's also important that we set our students up to succeed and not fail. So standards are important. I'm an advocate of changing some of our standards because, again, we have, as people of color, been marginalized, erased from, and silenced from social studies. Ethnic studies is a thing that will help, and districts around this state and around this country are refusing to infuse ethnic studies. I hear you and that argument all the time in regards to why are you introducing so many rebellions. I'm a firm believer that when you teach someone about the revolution, you are preparing them to fight in the future. And so school districts know this by design that if you teach them about slave rebellions, you're telling them that it's okay to fight. We need to be proverbial revolutionists. And I wholly believe that. And so that argument is, it holds no weight. We have to include these things because they're going to find out about it in college and they're going to be pissed when they come back to you. Like, why did you tell me all these lies?
Right. Well, I have students now that didn't know about Reconstruction, never heard about it, didn't know about Denmark Vesey, didn't know about, Ida B. Wells and all those folks. And so, yeah, it's definitely a challenge, and sadly, it's a disservice. And I'm hoping that people that are listening will take advantage of these times to really do that education. So even when they go back, and they'll be well prepared, and also have that discipline and routine. Our time is off, so let's do this, Sonia. Let me ask you three things that you would ask parents that are listening to do with their kids, starting today, to get them prepared. And like we were saying, will probably be the norm. I think, being at home will be the norm, but in the meantime, what can they do that's practical, and how can they tap into your class?
Fabulous. So one, I would definitely say establish a routine that has a goal every day. Two, I would say be kind to yourself. You are not, if you are, don't come from the teaching profession, don't hold yourself to a standard that I have to teach my student. That's not your job. Your job is to prepare your child to be educated. So be kind to yourself and be kind to your student. in setting up those goals, because we can, you know, put on our parent hat and have an expectation that is extremely high. I'm seeing so many memes go around to go and thank a teacher because you know that you've sent some bad kids to school. Now you're seeing it because you're home with them every day. Be kind to yourself in that regard, because we as educators know that parents at home are not teachers. And then the third thing I would say is, you have an entire day to accomplish, you know, whatever it is that you want to accomplish. So give breaks. They need time and space. They need balance to have their downtime. That's why I infuse, you know, try to put some good music on my little online classroom. I send my kids outside. You don't have a 30-minute, you know, lunchtime break. You got an hour and a half. Get that energy out. I'm breaking it up in chunks because it's more digestible and palatable for young students, and it just makes them want to learn more. The online classroom is on a Zoom platform, so we can have up to 100 kids in any given session. The class is called Teaching Time for Revolutionary Minds. It is a Black-centered curriculum that is inclusive and welcome to all students. I am online on Facebook as Sony Baloney Lewis. That's SONIBOLLONIE Lewis, LEWIS. I was having a brain fart at the moment. And then my business is Ascribe Educational Consulting, which is ASCRIBE, because we ascribe to success.
Real talk right there. So, you know, I appreciate you taking time out and, you know, sharing with us your approach towards this very important topic. As we just mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be sheltered in for the next month or so, and this will probably be the norm. And I'm going to emphasize over and over again on every show, we better start crafting and creating best practices that work for us. So, because once the dust settles, we don't want to have things imposed on us. We want to be able to make sure that we have established a pattern of success and that we can continue down that pattern. Sonia Lewis, we appreciate that. And again, give the website where people can tap in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Davey. I appreciate you.
No doubt. Give us the website one more time.
So I'm on, it's on Face, it's Ascribe Educational Consulting, ASCRIBE, Educational Consulting. You can find that Facebook page on Facebook, as well as Twitter and Instagram.
And people can tap into your classroom from there.
Yes, the links are there.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Here comes the proper education. Ching, bitty, bing, bitty, bing, bitty, bong. Rude boy. Ching, bitty, bing, bitty, bing, bitty, bong. Bang, bang,
here
bang,
comes
bang,
the rude bang, boy.
Proper education, education, proper education. Proper education, education, proper education. Now let me tell you folks just exactly what I mean. The way they try to lower the black man's self-esteem. Put us in the schools and I call them into graves. When he teach us about ourselves, all we learn that we were slaves. Then they say Jesus was white, understand. That means that mystery gone in the sky's a white man. These two things alone make us start to feel inferior. Then we grow up thinking they are superior. Why does the black licorice taste the worst? Why does the black jelly bean taste the worst? Why do the bad guys always wear black? Why is it bad luck when you see a black cat? Cause they're working subconsciously, subconsciously, working subconsciously. Working subconsciously, subconsciously, working subconsciously. This is why we must teach our strong black nation proper education, education, proper education, proper education. Proper education, proper education.
Yes, boss. Easy now, stop.
Come again?
Now they gave restitution to the Japanese. You see, they gave restitution to the Jews. Now over 400 years of slavery, rape, and murder, but I guess it's no restitution for the fools. They wanna use us as a tool, and also as a slave in the land of the free, in the home of the brave. Musa came to the cave and taught them the trick knowledge that the devil once forgot. Now the 10% rules over the 85. You see, we have to do more than just keep hope alive. I don't hope and I don't do dope, but I still feel the pain from my ancestors swinging on the rope. Now part of me is I distill on the devil's grill. Now me trust the devil, I never will. I just catch my four, grab my button, put it on my lapel, grab my people and get out of hell. See, this is why we must teach our young black nation proper education, education. Yes. Yes, we would like to say peace to all the gods in the earth, people of the universe, the original man. I would like to say peace to my brother Tony X. Yes. Yes. Wanna say to my physicals, free to land. ABC.